Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Xander, what are you drinking over there?
I am drinking the Monzama Brewing Oktoberfest Lager, it says. I've heard of these. This is out of Corvallis, Oregon.
Oregon?
Yes.
Okay. Where's that? That's in that godless Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, in a Corvallis.
Corvallis.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm drinking right now. Poppy, what are you drinking?
I am drinking Alesmith Oktoberfest, a German-style Märzenlager brewed and canned by Alesmith Brewing Company in San Diego, California.
Oh.
Hey, NPC, what are you drinking?
I have Spaten's Oktoberfest. It is imported by Import Brands Alliance in St. Louis, Missouri, and that's the only information on the bottom.
Yep, that probably means it's an import product.
It is
Germany. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's from Munich. It is from Spatenbrau, Munich, Germany. It is a malt liquor.
Really? Cool. How is it?
Oh, it's tasty. I would drink this casually. Oh, anyway, Jacob, what are you drinking over there?
Water.
What?
Water.
Okay, so
all right.
Well, All right. So anyway, it's Oktoberfest evening. We're going to be talking about Oktoberfest beers, preferably those that aren't the water, which is, I think, Olympia, what we had last time.
Yeah. No, this is water.
Oh, really?
It's just the water.
Real actual water.
Water.
Beer water?
No, water.
Alcoholic water?
No.
Bull Run's Finest?
Bull Run's Finest?
Yes.
Oh. Well, it's still pretty good.
Columbia River Slough?
Correct.
and by the way, you're listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. I am your producer, NPC.
Just Jacob.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
Poppy Beaujolais.
Once again, we've got the... Have we ever had the whole gang here?
I don't think.
So we've pretty much brought on Lensel. So now that I guess there's five of us that rotate through.
Anytime Oliver is not here, the whole gang is not here.
Xander, have you been here when the dog's been here?
We did Pugmire.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were all here for the character jam.
Yeah, we did that.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Including Oliver. Okay. Well, awesome. Hey. That was amazing. Yay to Pugmire. We've had some good responses on Pugmire. It's actually one of our most popular episodes to date. This past week, released the Nightmares Underneath bonus episode.
I just listened to that, actually, before I came here.
What did you think, Xander?
Well, you all plan to kill me and throw me in a dungeon, so fuck all y'all.
I haven't listened to that yet. Listening to an audiobook.
Said you wanted to make me a bard, and then
I got a direct message like, "Are you and Xander cool? Has there been a falling out?" Because apparently I leaned really hard into that.
No, you did.
It was really funny.
Filed and noted, but I would make a character for a one-off for that, and I would be a bard if you wanted me to, and I would be a good bard. With good tales and a song in my heart and a spirit for adventure.
He's a good bard, loves his mama.
Yeah, that would be me.
Oh.
Loves Muhammad and Arabia too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what?
Yes.
I too miss the rains down in Africa. So let's talk about rain. That was a really bad segue. I'm sorry.
Really, like,
let's cover it. Let's cover
that
it.
That was bad, and you should feel bad.
Yep. Get your fucking water away from this clink.
Oh God, you've contaminated my lager more than it already has been.
This is gross.
this is what you get when you mix the words Germany with purity. You get gross.
Too soon. What?
Too soon. Okay.
Oh, yeah. World War II is less than a century ago.
Too soon.
German purity laws are garbage. That's all I'm trying to say. With beer. Beer and everything else they've ever done.
Okay.
Okay. Ugh, this is gross.
Tonight we're talking about water, much like what I'm drinking.
Boo.
Well,
what?
Yeah, I'm drinking water tonight. Long story there, folks. Anyways, in the Pacific Northwest, it's fall. And for those of us who get the regular flyers via either email, Facebook, every website you look at via Google, or in your old-fashioned mailbox, motorcycle winter weather gear is here. And out here, that means rain. Rain, rain, rain. And how to ride in it, how to drive on it, and what to wear to keep yourself safe. Same's true with bicycles around here.
Uh-huh.
I just saw a flyer for REI's opening winter weather sale. And for...
I might be going there very soon.
Yes. Got to up your game there.
Yeah, my, you know, 3-mile daily commute is now 28, so I can stand a mile and a half of rain biking to and from work. That's fine. 14, new.
I have been a year-round rider in the Pacific Northwest for over a decade now. And that means A, serious commitment, B, a little bit of crazy, and C, just realizing you're going to have to get decent gear.
I learned to ride a motorcycle in the rain. Well, okay, that's wrong. I learned to ride a motorcycle through a lot of trial and error for a long period of time. I took the Team Oregon class in a rainstorm. It was awful. Yes. I hated everything about it. I hated the class, and I hated the fact that I was taking it during the rainstorm.
Oh, I did too.
Yep.
My first class was, it poured down rain, and I dropped the motorcycle.
Which is funny, because I'm looking at doing my Team Oregon thing now-ish.
Enjoy the weather.
Well, good luck, because generally the sign-ups are several months out.
Oh, there's ones in early October.
Okay, yeah.
So,
wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's really have to go and jump on that. But just because I am thinking about getting a scooter again, ironically for the winter months, so I don't have to bike, so my commute will be a lot less. I'm also looking at getting something higher than a 50cc, which means I have to go do my motorcycle endorsement really soon before I can even test drive anything.
Yep, yep.
So that's where I'm at.
So let's start with that. Winterizing a motorcycle in the Pacific Northwest, you know, depending on the age, style of motorcycle, it can be do next to nothing in the case of a lot of dual sports. For sport bikes and cruisers, you got to make sure you have tires that are good on wet pavement and going through puddles. You know, you have to consider whether or not you got the fairing that'll keep the water off you. I mean, I'll be honest. I rode a 1984 Honda Magna with no fairing for the better part of 2 years. And it was the most miserable bike in the rain. It was a cruiser style that had no protection whatsoever.
I have a removable windshield for my motorcycle, and I never use it anymore because I can't see through it when it rains.
Hey, Jacob, for the listeners at home, what's a fairing?
Okay, fairing is actually any combination of windshield or front-mounted protection. Some of this is built in, like the classic manifolds that go over the headlight and then cover the handlebars. There can also be protection. If you ever look at like the modern Goldwings, where they have the huge front end that covers basically everything and expands out to cover the front of the engine block, that's a fairing. Fairings cover the windshield. They cover protective fiberglass or plastic, or in some cases, metal things that cover the control module of the bike, and can include clip-ons to like highway bars that protect your legs.
Essentially, what you might describe as an old man bike. Mm-hmm. The front of it, that's a fairing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But they even make fairings for bicycles.
Huh.
And with scooters come with a built-in fairing most of the time. The entire front-end curve is technically a fairing.
Which I do like, because when I did have my scooter back in the day, it definitely kept my legs they kept them dry, which I thought was really quite excellent, which is one of the reasons why I kind of like scooters, is that in the winter months here, sure, my chest gets pounded with rain, but my legs are dry, and it's really kind of nice.
Yeah, rain riding is one of the problems that I have for legs, because you got to get a pair of rain pants, otherwise you're going to get soaked.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. But, I had no problems for the most part riding in the winter with my scooter back in the day. The only problems that I really came across was when, I don't know, Black Ice decided to show up.
Black Ice fucking sucks. Yep. Black Ice is why I stopped writing generally around November. Once I took a couple spills on Black Ice, and the kind of spills where it's like, when it happened, I didn't even have a moment to take control of the situation. It was, you hit a patch of Black Ice, and a heartbeat later, I'm on one side of the street, my bike is still sliding across to the other one.
Yep.
And I'm like, how did this happen? I don't even remember this moment. It was just instantaneous.
Yeah, I've had a few of those.
And it freaks me out. And Portland, Portland is in that area of that Pacific Northwest permafreeze, where what our temperature does is it very rapidly approaches the low 30s. We get to that freezing point, and then it goes below it. At night, everything freezes. It rises above it during the day. Things slowly start to melt, but then it goes right back down at night. So we're in this waffling period, and I just don't trust the roads because I'm a coward.
Or when the ground level is at below freezing temperatures, but it's warmer in the atmosphere. So as soon as the water, it'll rain. And as soon as it hits the ground, it just freezes instantaneously. And so it's just perfectly clear ice that just looks like asphalt. Awful.
Point of order, I don't think that makes you a coward. I think that makes you an intelligent, responsible human being.
Yeah, I'm going to back up Poppy on that one.
It depends on the bikers you talk to. Some people say you just got to learn to ride better and power through it.
So you're on two wheels and it's ice.
It's like,
I don't know what you can do.
So, again, coming from northern Minnesota, where I have members of my own family whose proudest statement is there are only 3 weeks out of the year they don't ride. I'm a big believer in the mantra, ride your own ride. Ride according to your abilities, ride according to your bike, ride according to the speed you're comfortable at, and ride according to the circumstances you're comfortable riding in. Yeah, there are some folks out there with something to prove who will do year-round, ride in any condition, you know, through snow, sleet, hail, ice. Ride your own ride. Don't let other people tell you that something you're doing is not, is cowardly or something.
A fucking men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Xander, one thing to think about, in prepping for this episode, I reached out to a couple friends of mine.
Yeah.
Who are scooter drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest takeaways they gave me was, this is the time of year where if you're a scooter commuter, you buy new tires. Because,
well, I was going to buy a new bike, but...
Yeah. But even if you buy a new scooter, one of the things they say is you want to be riding on a fresh pair of tires in like September to get them roughed in ahead of when we're going to see a lot of the water. Because with some exceptions, scooter tires aren't particularly good in rain, but there are some that are okay.
Okay.
And bike or scooter or bicycle, keep your tires properly inflated during the
winter. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when everything gets slick and icy. Properly inflated tires can make the difference between losing control or not.
Yeah.
And remember, what's printed on your tire is not what proper inflation is. Check your manual. It's based on your weight. It's based on the settings of your suspension. If you're on a motorcycle, variable suspension, and it's based on the vehicle. Things like geometry, wheelbase, all of that change what pressure you should be running your tires at.
Because when you think about it logically, there's no reason that you should have the same tire pressure if you weigh 120 pounds or if you weigh 300 pounds. Like, that's a vast difference in what your tire pressure probably should be. I mean, just think about it. Like, it's more than double. And so, yeah, manuals, check them.
When it comes to clothing, though, layers, layers, layers. Come on. You know, you will get a lot of different opinions. And I'm just going to say that the only way to figure out the right opinion is to find out what works for you. I will be totally upfront that I went through about 6 sets of different combinations of riding gear before I finally settled into what works for me. So one person's opinion, that being me, is that since I cannot afford the Savile Row of motorcycle gear, a.k.a. Aerostitch, Duluth, Minnesota.
Aerostitch, if you're looking to sponsor a podcast in Portland, let us know.
And donate some gear.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, looking forward to seeing you when you come to Milwaukee next weekend. And unless you're going to be getting to like the high end level of stuff, I've found that for me, having a non-insulated waterproof outer layer that I put my warm layers under work better.
So I was talking to a motorcycle rider just the other day when I had gotten off of work over at Edgefield, and I had mentioned that, one, I was looking at getting a scooter, ironically, in the wintertime, but also that I biked on a bicycle to Edgefield as well, you know, my 28-mile round trip, and he recommended frog togs.
Yes.
What are frog togs?
I got a real close-hand experience with them when he proceeded to then go and drop trow and show me his frog togs.
What are frog togs?
They are, I believe, you wear them underneath your motorcycle gear?
Frog togs make a couple different products.
The ones he showed me, he had to like actually drop down his motorcycle pants to show me, which was kind of like, hey, thanks. Yeah. I could have just asked you a question, but I'm glad I got the visual. That's cool.
They make a waterproof underlayer now. They originally came onto the market with a textile-based, minimum weight, pullover-style, minimal frills waterproof level.
They seemed very light.
And I like them. I have a couple problems with how they're cut that's just based on my body shape. But by and large, they're great. And to be honest, they're cheap.
That's what he was telling me, is that they were very inexpensive. He's like, yeah, I got this whole set for like $30. And I went, top and bottom?
Yeah. Top and bottom.
Oh, well, I mean, that's affordable.
If you're just starting out as a rider, just go over to Cycle Gear, pick up a set of frog togs. They don't take up a lot of space. They're not light. They're not particularly heavy. They're reasonably priced.
Another piece of gear that I highly recommend getting if you have a motorcycle or a helmet, especially whatever vehicle you're riding, if you have a helmet that has a visor of any kind, is winter gloves that have a built-in windshield wiper in your finger.
Ooh.
They're the best things ever. You're just doop, swipe, wink, and it doesn't smudge. If it's a good one, it doesn't smudge. It doesn't scooch. It's really awesome.
No, those were great. Those were invaluable because my first winter with the scooter was just constant wiping, and it was perfect.
Also, I highly advise not using Rain-X. Especially if you have a standard kind of the whatever the material is, it will start to degrade the material, and you'll start getting visual smudges or whatever blurs
as using Rain-X on your visor.
On your visor.
Okay.
Yeah, don't do that. However, instead, what you should do is look into visor alternatives. For example, HJC, which is the helmet that I wear because it's big and they're the only ones who make a helmet that fits my head, has a pin lock mechanic. And the pin lock has like a dual layer sealed waterproof thing, and it's amazing.
It is. It's I do not have one, but several of my friends and other riders do, and I will be riding along with them and having to wipe, and they're sitting there just blindly ignoring it because it's not a problem unless they get lots of beating on the surface.
And plus, when you are riding colder times, your inside of your helmet is actually going to fog up more.
Right.
With that pin lock, makes it a non-problem. It's magic. I don't fog at all in my helmet with the pin lock installed.
And if you're going to, I'm talking mostly for someone who's getting their gear for the first time or really starting to think about their gear. One thing to splurge on that's worth splurging on is a balaclava with a waterproof neck.
Yes.
Or a neck gaiter can also help.
Do we have any recommendations for other maybe essential winter safety gears, especially for maybe new time riders or people who just might not know what they're getting into if they're new to this part of the country?
So a couple other recommendations. I know a bunch of people who have completely different helmets that they wear in the winter. I know
Why is that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, they're either people who wear half helms, three-quarter helms in the summer.
Sure,
I know a lot of people who switch to more reflective, more visible helmets in the winter. To the point where
it gets dark early here.
Yeah, And to the point where next week I'm going over to help a buddy put on a retro-reflective tape onto one of his helmets and do some tests on it. The other thing is that, you know, we all know the image of the motorcyclist wearing all black and how cool it is. And maybe you have your colors on if you're one percenter or want to be like that. Come on. It's raining out. It's nothing's wrong with putting on some reflective gear. You know, it's your taillight is not going to protect you in a downpour. It's worth doing.
So one of the things that I got recently was this, I mean, this is mostly for jogging. Now I'm using it for bicycling, but I feel like it would probably be able to be used for motorcycling or scootering as well. Is like a giant like light up vest. Is that something you would recommend or not? Or is that too distracting on the road? What do you think?
My take on that is I am not a fan of those for motorcycling just because except when you're at a stop, they don't catch the eye because of how fast motorcycles can travel. Mm-hmm. After, unlike a bicyclist, where it's bright and noticeable relative to the speed, on a lot of motorcycles, it's just not picked up in the rain.
And as a reminder to both cyclists and motorcyclists alike, be sure to have some kind of retro-reflective material on your side, say mm-hmm. up the side of your leg or on your arms or on the side of your helmet, so you're not invisible if someone's coming at you.
To be T-boned, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't want to get T-boned.
Don't want to get T-boned. Please be reflective on all sides. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, moving on to the next topic. And the next beer. Poppy, what are you drinking now?
I am drinking Nakasi Brewing Company's seasonal release, Oktoberfest. That is from right here in Oregon, Eugene, Oregon.
And Xander, what'd you switch to?
Well, I had not a lot of good luck with the Alesmith Oktoberfest that Poppy very rudely poured into my glass after. She also had not a lot of good luck with it. Alesmith, I'm sure you make other good beers, but
I did not care for it.
Did not care for it either. I think that's a Biker's Dyson bar first. I am now drinking the Eyinger Private Braut Brew. Yeah, no, I'm mangling that. This is Oktoberfest Marzen, authentic Bavarian lager, brewed and bottled in Eying, Germany.
All right, and I have now opened up a bottle of the Weihenstephaner Festbier, which, and I think I pronounced that right. This is some Weihenstephaner.com. Does it say where it's from? Here we go. It is brewed and bottled by Reistatz. Reistatz Braubier. Weihenstephaner freezing Germany. It's freezing in Germany right now, I guess.
Probably. I don't,
we apologize to the entire country of Germany.
Brewed according to the purity laws of 1516. So yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Government warning, by the way. According to the Surgeon General, women should not drink alcohol beverage during pregnancy because of the risk of birth defects. Just so you know, I want you to know that the Weihenstephaner Festbier wants you to know this.
NPC, alcohol is considered a teratogen.
That's what? A monster in the D&D book,
nope,
right?
Nope.
That's the one
type of spider.
Epic one that you got to do like eight different things to kill. Yeah. I tried to kill the teratogen once.
Long leg teratogen.
Anyway, let's talk some gaming stuff here, and specifically, speaking of D&D, and the monster, it's the Tarrasque. Please don't write me a letter telling me I pronounce it wrong. Anyway, we're going to talk some gaming stuff. Oh, and Jacob's still drinking his fucking water. This time we're going to talk about online gaming platforms, but very specifically, online tabletop platforms, also known as virtual tabletops, or VTTs. So the concept behind this is you have a bunch of people that you want to play games with, or maybe you don't, but you just want to play some games and you don't want to get in some Call of Duty or some MMOs or whatnot. You want to play some good old dice rolling RPGs,
mm-hmm.
sometimes even board games. They have a few that do this, but mainly you want to play some D&D.
It's Oktoberfest. Who gives a shit? Keep going.
And
oh, I thought I had one. It's gone now.
We'll get more soon.
Damn it,
Jacob. You got a burp coming?
No, I don't. Okay. Sorry.
He's drinking water.
Water does not produce burps at the same level as beer.
It really doesn't. Anyway, you've got a game you want to play, or maybe you've got a group you want to play it with, or maybe both. The problem is you are not local to each other. You are all sitting around different tables and different computers in different parts of the country, if not the world, and you want to play together. Virtual tabletops allow you to do that. They allow you to get a gaming group that does not meet face to face. Maybe you have a webcam, maybe you don't, but maybe you do tactical things and you move things around on a screen that everybody can see. But ultimately, they all share in common a thing, and that is you can chat with each other, roll dice, or simulate the rolling of dice, and that's about it. Now, I think at least two of you here I've played in various ways online games.
Yes.
And Poppy.
Yes.
Sneeze.
No, it's so belchy. Oh. We're drinking so much beer.
Poppy.
Yes.
You have never experienced this, have
I
you?
Have not. No, I have. Okay. I have not played any online role-playing games.
All right. This
either
is going to be interesting,
like
for
tabletop or
more pigs.
Oh, piggies are so cute.
It's like
so
my favorite kind of barbecue.
So more good. Pigs.
Yeah, they're so cute, so yeah. Delicious.
Now, the most recent person I think I've played.
There it is.
There
I'm
you
sorry.
Go. Oh,
excuse
Poppy.
Me, gentlemen.
I apologize for nothing.
This is going to be that episode. By the way, warning: in case you have made it this far and weren't aware, we're drinking
beer.
Beer.
So much beer.
Now, Jacob, you're the most recent one that I've played with in this kind of platform. And we used Discord. We
correct.
Didn't really have a miniatures mat or anything. We all just kind of narrated what was happening. And we didn't even use cameras. It was all just voice and a little bit of dice rolling bot. What do you think about that?
I really liked that. It worked well. You know, part of it was the game we were playing. It lended itself very easily. The more narrative the game is, the less need there is for the visual component. And yeah, I love Discord for that. I use Discord for business meetings and all the reasons it works for that. The clear vocal tone, the built-in text options all helped make that a great gaming experience.
Xander, you and I played together via Roll20, a tabletop platform. We did my short-lived Adventure School campaign.
Which was one of my favorites.
How did you enjoy what did you think about the experience of that?
So having done both, you know, being with you in person and doing tabletop role-playing games and also doing this VTT for the first time, I mean, my preference obviously is being in person in a group.
Yeah.
However, you had some really great friends that were not in this city that were so exceptional to be around that to me, it almost made up for the fact that we were not there in person. You also made really exquisite maps. You made really great people that we could move around the maps and everything like that. It moved pretty seamlessly. Mm-hmm. And I got that fix that I needed of just being part of a tabletop group. Despite the not being in person, some of the issues that I had were my own kind of technological drawbacks, which was I didn't have a headphone microphone setup, which would have made things louder and better and easier to hear people with. So it was just kind of having to put my laptop on full volume and kind of shouting into it. But that was that was me. I mean, again. Because you had such beautiful maps, because you had such beautiful characters, and because everyone I was playing with, I really enjoyed playing with, and I had known I knew all of them, I think, in real life at some point. It helped a lot. I think it'd be weird if I were to jump into a game and having not known anybody at all. That might have been a more kind of confusing aspect for me, because the personal connection is what I like about role-playing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's for me the whole point.
Yeah, it's like, these are my friends. I know them, and I want to game with them. And so I think part of VTT, if I'm not mistaken, is I just want to be a part of a game, and maybe someone needs a player, and I just want to jump in, but you don't know them. And that's a little strange to me.
Two things. One is for later. So I think the idea could be like, I think all of us are transplants here. None of us grew up here. We've all moved here from other parts of the country. And I think this would be a really interesting way to like connect and hang out with your buddies if you're not like phone talkers, right? Like, yeah. I can't imagine like, excuse me, like NPC, I can't imagine you like getting on the phone and chatting it up with Greg for like an hour and a half the way I do with some of my friends. But like, you could totally get online and damn girl, I could totally see you getting online and like playing a game instead. And like, that's how you connect with, I didn't even lose a beat. That's how you connect really with impressed. Your friends to, that's how you stay connected to your friends who live out of state is like, let's play some D&D because we're not really like phone talkers, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of like that. It's kind of lovely.
Yeah. There have been times where I have gotten on really long conversations with our listener, Greg.
Our listener, hi, Greg. Greg.
Well, we have two listeners now.
Oh, I think we have three. One?
We have three.
Somebody who joined in our Discord channel.
But, yep.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
We have three listeners.
Oh, cool.
Excellent.
Nice.
Yes. Right. But hi, guys.
But you're right. Yeah, it is. It creates an interesting social, a way to socialize with old friends, but also do a thing at the same time that you both enjoy that doesn't involve just sitting, laying in bed, having a phone conversation.
Right. That's, it's kind of like when you miss your folks and you're like, well, I miss my mom, but I don't have like really anything to talk about, but I like really want to talk to my mom. So you call her and ask her like a question about how to do something, you know, like, how do I cook a turkey, you know? And then like, she'll tell you like an hour and a half like goes by and it's wonderful.
Well, I think it's one of those, you know, moments too, where, you know, if someone asks, hey, what are you wearing? And you go, well, light chain mail. And,
now, Jacob, when I brought this conversation to this topic to the conversation option list here, you said you had some things to say about it as well.
Yeah, I'm the Luddite of the group. I live in a house with no television, no internet connection, and my cell phone finally had a touchscreen and a data plan only a little over a year ago. So it's, the VTT thing has not been a significant part of my life in the last 5-6 years. That said, I have played a lot of board games that have computer interfaces with either Skype or Google Hangouts or now Discord. Like, I have had a friend where just last month we played a game of chess while chatting via Discord. And we had a Facebook chess game that we were just talking about and doing that. However, when it comes to VTT, I had a brief experience back, I think it was 2009. I did some digging trying to figure out when it was. And a friend of mine was starting a Savage Worlds game. And
Savage Worlds is a good one, that very simple to play in that kind of a platform.
That might actually help me build it, drill down on the time, because it was Roll20, one of the big boys in the virtual tabletop space. And it was right when they were starting to implement stuff that would support Savage Worlds on virtual tabletop.
They haven't been around since 2009.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when. I was like, been trying to dig it out.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I don't think they have. No.
I just didn't care for it at the time. It didn't work well. There was a lot of lag at times, and at the time I was borrowing a work connection that was functionally a T1. But what drove me nuts at the time and why I ended up finally backing away from it was because of the terms of use policy. And I've been told that this has changed, but back in the day, I had some big issues with how they handled intellectual property and terms of use. And so that was really problematic for me. And that was part of the reason I backed away from it.
Okay. What kind of problems are you talking about? What were the ones that struck you most particularly?
Well, in the early days, the user agreements basically said that if you imported anything to like an image or something to the tabletop, they owned it. And that was problematic.
Yeah, that's kind of a shady user agreement kind of thing.
I think they still do that too. I think a lot of them, unfortunately, still have that clause. And I think some of them have improved that. Mm-hmm. The ones that actually have built-in marketplaces. Okay, when I say the ones, I think it's just the one that has a built-in user-contributed marketplace says, honestly, I don't know. I haven't looked at their terms of services in a while. I know that Roll20 is still the biggest one. Well, one of the two biggest ones, and I think it's probably the most approachable one currently. They have a user-contributed marketplace where you can like scan, you can make your own images and scan mm-hmm. them in and sell them. Mm-hmm. You could sell tokens to mm-hmm. be used there. And then you make money off of it, but so do they. But I don't think they own it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised because I know that at the time there was actually some issues with some gaming companies being concerned with that IP issue. And I'm sure they've changed it by now. But back then, I had some issues with that. And I was running stuff that I was crafting and in some cases test playing for people who were going to publish that. So that was a problem.
By IP, you mean intellectual property, intellectual not property. Internet provider.
Yes.
Got it. I was going to say,
just
like,
checking.
Well, I do know for a fact that big companies like Wizards of the Coast, Pinnacle, who does Savage Worlds, and others, they publish, Paizo, they publish their modules and their books mm-hmm. for sale through Roll20 and through Fantasy Grounds and the other platforms that have that kind of an option. Mm-hmm. So I would be very surprised if Roll20 was able to tell Hasbro,
right,
well, you published here, we own your shit.
I guess for somebody who's never done this before and has not encountered this before, I'm curious. I just did a quick Google search, and it's apparently a software program, VTT. Can you speak a little bit to, like, the equipment, like the hardware and technical requirements of setting this up for people who are interested?
There are a few options available. And when I said that Roll20 was the most approachable, it's because Roll20 is one of the only ones that is based in your web browser. You don't need to install a separate application in order to use it. It's compatible with all major web browsers. It's simply a website that you go to, you set up an account, it loads some things through, what, Java or Flash or some...
Yeah, I don't actually know what it runs on.
Does it cost any money?
No.
Or is it ad-supported?
It's free, but there are paid versions of it. You can subscribe to higher levels of service that give you more options.
So minimally, computer, internet, there are free versions.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
What frequently happens is the game master will have their account that is a paid professional pro account, they call it, but the players do not need to pay at all to connect to, play in, and enjoy the benefits of a game run by a game master with the highest level account. So the game master's benefits extend to the players who are connected to his game while they're connected to his game.
I have so many questions.
It's only one. So if the game master pays all of the premium amount of money, then however many players are connected to that game get the benefits, even though the rest of them are not paying for it.
Oh, fascinating.
While they're in that game.
And well, they're in that game with that game master that has that higher paid account, which is kind of great.
Think of it. Well, we'll use classic analog having a car. You have a car.
I do.
But your friend doesn't have a car. But you
so
give
many.
Your friend a ride somewhere.
Yes.
Your friend benefits from all of the features of your vehicle while they're in the vehicle.
Freeloading
bastard.
But
they don't have to pay for their own vehicle. And they don't have to pay for the insurance.
And you've picked up three other friends.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the way Roll20 does it. And I think you can even buy like a lifetime, one-time lifetime membership, never have to pay anything, and you get everything.
Okay, quick aside. This Ninkasi Oktoberfest, while delicious, the belches taste like the smell that would happen at the Italian restaurant I worked at when I was 15 years old.
Well, you've been drinking multiple beers.
That's
I think
true.
Your belches are combining the...
it tastes exactly like how...
This is Belchtoberfest at this
Pasta
point.
Pasta J's smell. That's okay.
Anyway, there are other platforms other than Roll20. Roll20 is currently the big man, the big dog on the block. But then another one that is one could say equally big, would be Fantasy Grounds. Mm-hmm. Fantasy Grounds does not run in a browser. Fantasy Grounds requires you to download and install an application. Mm. You have to download the program. You have to have your players download the program, and you connect to each other through it. Fantasy Grounds is really powerful. It's really extendable. It's got support from many of the major publishers out there. It has a lot of limitations as well. First off, it looks like it was written in the 90s. It is a hideous piece of software. I'm sorry, guys. You guys are really
raise
cool,
your GUI
your
name.
You need
so
to,
we're playing the mud?
Yeah, it basically looks like a graphical mud.
What's wrong
with really
mud?
Cool dice effects. And it's got some visual overlays, but I'm a programmer. I've been using... I can generally find my way through any kind of a UI, and the Fantasy Grounds UI, I'm sorry, is fucking terrible. It's bad. I don't want you to feel bad about it. I want you to improve it.
Right.
I say this as somebody with a Premiere...
Who programs.
No, I say this as somebody with the elevated... I purchased it. It was for like $300. I've purchased the software. Make it better. And then I will purchase more. Fantasy Grounds is one-time purchases as opposed to Roll20, which is a subscription. Some might say that Fantasy Grounds is more expensive than Roll20, but if you just purchase the basic software, it actually ends up being significantly cheaper in the long run to buy the modules as they are and then never have to pay a subscription. However, they do offer a subscription if that's your jam.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to pay the big one-time entrance fee and you can just pay like $10 a month. It's hideous, though. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's awful. It's ugly.
Wasn't there one called Living Table for a while?
I don't know. Okay. There was one called Tabletop Forge, which got acquired and merged into Roll20, and I miss it dearly after backing their Kickstarter. I'd be very disappointed with the way that went. There's a few others. Map Tools is one of the oldest.
Oh, yeah.
If not the oldest. Yeah. It is powerful. It is extendable. And it is 100% free, and it is confusing.
Oh, yeah.
It is not an easy program to use. You're probably going to end up spending more time jamming with the program and trying to make it do what you want it to do than you will actually using it.
Yeah. No.
And then you got to deal with connection issues, and it also requires a client. You have to install the program.
Right.
There's a few others out there, but nothing. None of them really come close.
There was some controversy you wanted to talk about, right, NPC?
We'll get to the controversy in a bit.
Okay.
I do want to talk about three alternatives, and these are really just chat programs, but they're what a lot of people use to play games who don't have a tabletop between them. They don't care so much about moving miniatures around. Instead, what they do is they talk and they play out. They do the theater of the mind style play.
Mm.
First, there's Skype. Everybody knows Skype. It gets worse and worse every year. It's impossible to use without embedded ads now. Fuck you, Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Google Hangouts. Google Hangouts, they try to make worse and worse every year. They've gotten rid of their local applications. Now everything must be run in a browser, which is good and bad.
And it's no longer called Hangouts as of like last week. It's
really?
They changed the name on it and it's been reformatted.
Is it Google Chill?
No.
Google likes to change and destroy everything that they make us first love.
Yes.
And for that, it's hard for me to recommend anything that Google ever does. But finally, my favorite is Discord. And one day Discord's probably going to go the same direction and start flooding us with stuff that we don't care about. But Discord is a fantastic multi-person web-based and client-based chat tool.
Yep.
It has an application for every platform you can think of and then some. And it has video chat. It has voice chat. It has group servers. You can build your own group, your own channel. You can build your all different kind of stuff.
And we use that extensively here at Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
We do have our own Discord channel, and maybe one day we'll do some live streams of this through it if we get a fourth listener. That would be awesome.
And please, come join us on the channel and say hello. Most of my online gaming experience has actually been through this weird hybrid of Google Hangouts for the voice aspect, Google Drive to share handouts, maps, etc., etc., and a little program called Slack so we can chat and roll back and forth.
Slack is very similar in some ways to Discord. I prefer Discord, but they have a lot of the same features.
I prefer Discord too.
However, when you get back to what you were saying, Xander, yes, there just this week. In fact, yesterday was a big hullabaloo regarding the online VTT communities.
Would you call it more of a hullabaloo or a kerfuffle?
I would call it a hullabaluffle. Yeah.
Heard
it here first, y'all. Hullabaluffle. It was a hullabaluffle.
Sounds like a really adorable creature.
I do.
I know.
It's like a snuffleupagus.
It's like a heffalump.
The next pet that I have in Warframe is going to be named Hullabaluffle. Anyway.
Oh, God.
Yesterday, not yesterday, but the night before, there was some dude had basically had it with the customer service that Roll20 offered and went on this. He had collected logs, taken screenshots, collected all of the communications that he had over essentially getting banned for offering criticism, but then getting double banned and accused of being someone else who had offered criticism a year before.
Accused of having an alternate account where he kept doing it.
Accused of being a sock puppet. And then their moderator, who was also the fucking owner of the company, decided...
Wait, Nolan T's the owner of the company?
Yeah, he's the managing partner.
He's one of the founding partners.
Oh, shit.
I think he actually bought out the other partners.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not only is he the manager of the company, he's also the moderator of their fan site.
Of their subreddit.
More than their subreddit, he is active on a couple of their other media platforms.
Yeah. First off, that's a big no-no. You don't moderate. Once you get to a certain size and level of popularity, you need to turn your community over to the community and let them be a community instead of, you know, suffering from your heavy-handed moderation tactics. And I have opinions here because I've had an encounter with this guy before. He banned me for giving somebody Photoshop advice after they asked for it because my Photoshop advice to this user could be construed as competing against existing marketplace correctors, and they don't want competition. They don't allow competition. They don't allow criticism. They don't allow any of that stuff. And that is why Roll20 right now is going to be hard for me to actually recommend to any of you use.
And this is not the first time there's been problems with their customer service /PR wing.
Well, their customer service, the head of customer service is the head of the company, and he's an abrasive jerk. So suddenly, the entirety of Reddit, thousands of users of Reddit got wind of this and flooded their subreddit with memes and insults and drama. And to the point that instead of responding to it,
just deleted it.
They just kept deleting all the posts that came in, which made things worse. Mm-hmm. So the Redditors were like, oh, no, you didn't. And God. Oh, and then the director finally admitted, he said, oh, yeah, we found out we were wrong, but we're banning him anyway because he made this mess.
He contacted them too many times in a 36-hour period.
So their whole thing was, I'm sorry, but not. It was you the whole time. We're the victim.
That's some victim blaming bullshit.
As of
not that this it ever morning, happens.
It was
anything.
The second highest bigger. Downvote. His apology or his statement was the second highest downvoted comment on Reddit ever.
The first being -630,000+ downvotes from an Electronic Arts representative.
Oh, for the Star Wars. Yes. Yeah. Fuck that guy. The guy probably got a promotion and a new job, so it's fine.
So right now, I imagine there's some upheaval at Roll20.
Is our podcast going to get sued?
Probably not, because by the time this launches, they're probably going to have either fired him or maybe he'll have made a public statement of apology to the user. Anyway, they all of Roll20 pulled out of their subreddit and handed moderation over to a completely other community who is now moderating it. And
like a third party arbitrator.
Yeah. Nolan has yet to respond. I hope he does. It's kind of a douchebag move, dude. You know,
it really sucks when companies violate their own code of conduct.
Oh, no, 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 they didn't. You know what their code of conduct says?
Their
code of conduct says we're in charge and we will ban you for arguing with us.
Yes.
They literally have clauses in their code of conduct telling you that you will be banned if you ever disagree with their moderators.
Oh, my
God. Well, and it also said, too, we're not in the business for having discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the business of reporting bugs. If you report anything other than bugs or glitches in our software, we don't want to hear from you.
But if you report a bug in a way that is contrary to how they believe that their software runs, that's a complaint. And yes, they'll ban you for it.
And they have banned people for it.
That is like like wealthy, socially inept, 25-year-old nerdy white boy fucking coder bullshit I have heard in a very long time.
Preach it, sister.
Fuck you, buddy. You
can
live
I get
in a
no
world,
man?
You work in a world. You live in a world with other fucking people.
In a world with other fucking people. You live and work.
You know what? People are going to disagree with you. I know your mommy has wiped your ass your entire life. And just everybody, like, you're just a precious fucking snowflake. But you know what? Fuck you, buddy. Fuck you.
And on that note, regardless of this bad actor's personality affecting the company, it's an actually really solid community of fans that use it. And I know that Reddit's antics have made it seem like everybody hates Roll20, but it's a solid community. There's some really helpful people in there, and it is the most approachable of the platforms. So provided that all of this simmers down, while at this exact moment in time, I do not recommend that you give them any money, it is still the most approachable, and hopefully they improve and make it to a point where I can honestly say, you should check out Roll20. It's really good.
There's also a difference between a platform being bad as far as PR and just dealing with their fans and the community being bad as well. The community is great.
The community is actually really solid.
The company is fucking up. The community is still great.
Well, and it sounds like it was one guy in the company who fucked
up. He's kind of a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's basically the guy. And their company, I think, has maybe 20 people
in it. It's not like some random, you know, rogue. It is one of the founding members. Like,
So the guy who made the thing is a dickwad. The community is awesome.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And for that, follow along. Pay attention to what's happening. I don't recommend that you give them money right now until they kind of straighten up. But
lay your shit up.
Again, they also do have free accounts. Check them out. Roll20. And if you don't like it, check out Fantasy Grounds if you know somebody who's running a game, because it doesn't cost you anything to join in.
We will not be asking Roll20 for sponsorship.
Probably not. Probably not. And now we are moving into our bar topic and opening brand new bottles. This time I've got Fest Beer from Occidental Brewing Company.
That's Portland-based.
I believe that is Portland-based. Brewed and bottled by Occidentals here in Portland, Oregon. Liam Occidentist.
Mm-hmm. What?
What else we got?
I have just cracked open the Stormbreaker Brewing Stormtoberfest Marzen style lager.
I think you pronounced all of those correctly.
For the first time tonight, before you Oktoberfest Stormtoberfest.
Oh,
unique,
you already failed.
Apparent in the biscuity malt aroma, sweet with breadiness, but balanced with two noble hops. This Marzen style lager, deep orange in appearance with a creamy mouthful, will surely take you back to Munich. Prost.
Prost.
It says brewed in Portland, but I thought Stormbreaker moved, so I'm confused.
Who else has something new? Anybody? No? Jacob, what do you got?
Cossie.
Are you finally drinking?
I am finally drinking.
Oh,
it's no longer water.
God, it's like I didn't even know you there for a minute.
It's no longer water. Ladies and gents, I was losing my voice for most of today, so I was easing it up. But the unrelenting scorn of my co-hosts has brought
shame.
Ninkasi Brewing Company seasonal release Oktoberfest. This wonderful beer is, as always, from year to year, not a huge takeaway. It's a good solid Oktoberfest beer crafted with Oregon grown hops. This Oktoberfest marries Northwest ingredients with traditional German style. Celebrating the harvest, this light-bodied beer has a toasty malt bouquet and just a touch of hop bitterness. Prost! By the way, I'd like to say that when they say just a touch of hop bitterness, that's predicated on you being from the Pacific Northwest, where they will hop everything to an inch of its goddamn life.
Yes. Yeah, no, you're right. This is way hoppier than a normal Oktoberfest beer, which is why it's been one of the few that I have not disliked so far tonight.
Yeah, Ninkasi has been my favorite thus far. The rest of these I do not care for.
I've actually enjoyed every one of these.
Here, drink that.
This Stormbreaker is actually pretty good. And it's got a robot that looks very nervous to be wearing lederhosen
There's
on
a
it,
robot?
Which is pretty great.
Let me see. Well, that's... Oh, he does look really uncomfortable.
Okay, guys, I gotta know. What the fuck is Oktoberfest? And why is it in September?
It's a festival.
I want to know.
Hold on.
Hey, Poppy, can you put on your beer hat for a minute and drop some hot facts on us?
Ew. How about some hot, hoppy facts?
Turns out we don't know shit about Oktoberfest, apparently, so Poppy is looking on Wikipedia.
I am looking at Wikipedia. Okay, Oktoberfest is the world's largest Volksfest, or beer festival, and traveling fun fair held annually in Munich, Bavaria, Germany. It is a 16 to 18 day folk festival running from mid or late September to the first weekend of October, with more than 6 million people from around the world attending the event every year. It is often called the Weizen, after the colloquial name for the fairgrounds, the Theresienwiesen. Okay, it's been held annually since 1810. Basically, the short version is back in ye olden times, a princess got married to a king, and there was a big festival in honor of their wedding on the 12th of October in 1810. There were horse races and fun fairs and all kinds of fun stuff that happened. And basically, while there's some controversy surrounding the exact origin of some of the events, since this wedding in 1810, this festival has been held every year. It is an important part of Bavarian culture.
And apparently, if you have a town that has a heavy German community, or if you have a town that is steamed in a German way here in the States, you just have to do it. You have to. Everywhere that I've lived that it's had either German people or like a German community, such as in Georgia, we have this town called Helen, Georgia, which is essentially like one big German-styled tourist village. Well, guess what? They have a fucking bitchin' Oktoberfest.
My understanding is that our biggest local bitchin' Oktoberfest is in Mount Angel.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct.
Correct, yeah. And there's also a fabulously beautiful Benedictine monastery there.
Yep, also true.
Yeah.
Coming from the upper Midwest, where Wisconsin was populated almost entirely by Germans, the entire state celebrates Oktoberfest. And, oh my God.
I know nothing about it. I know that these have been some pretty hoppy beers, and I think half of them have tasted nothing like the others. So I'm curious what makes an Oktoberfest beer, and I'm disappointed that y'all don't know.
I'm going to strike back on the fact that these beers are hoppy. They are not. These are super not hoppy beers, in my opinion.
By the standards of the community we live in.
Right. We're in the Pacific Northwest. So if you're not like pushing 50 IBU, I don't even taste it anymore.
Yeah. Here, what we frequently do is use hops to mask bad mixtures. Like,
That's a hot take.
It's just like, oh, well.
Shots fired.
Oh,
shots
God,
fired.
The beer didn't taste how I want it to be. So I'm just going to add more hops, cover that fucking flavor. That to me is what most Pacific Northwestern brewers kind of do. They're just like, well, I'm not really that good at mixing flavors, so I'm just going to make it hoppy.
All right, well.
There are flavors other than hoppy.
Apparently, there is a criteria for an Oktoberfest beer, which is, I think, why a lot of these say style.
Mm.
because right. there's apparently a
German purity laws.
Reinheitsgebot.
German purity laws.
Which is, yeah, literal purity order or German beer purity law. And
that doesn't sound right.
There's only.
And it's so true.
There are only the only breweries that can produce Oktoberfest beer under the aforementioned criteria are six breweries that I cannot pronounce.
Okay.
Huh.
Augusteiner Brau, Hacker Schorbrau,
Lorenbrau. We just lost Germany, y'all. We just lost Germany.
I am so sorry.
So this is me going off of someone else's information that may or may not be dubious. But what it was explained to me for an Oktoberfest is they do tend to be a somewhat hoppy beer. And part of that was because of when they have to start making the beers to be in be ready for September or the end of September when Oktoberfest starts. And because of that, they're using mid-season just green bloom hops. And so they end up being a little bit bitter with not as much hop funk to them and a little bit more spicy.
Hop funk. Because we're in fresh hop season right now.
Yes. But
and yet we're drinking Oktoberfest beers.
Well, you know, climates are different.
I didn't think beer had to sit that long. I thought it was only a couple of days.
Right. But if you think about it, you need to it takes to make this volume, you usually need a couple week head start. Mm-hmm. So things get rushed a bit. That was what it was explained.
Like millions and millions of barrels of beer being consumed during this time period.
If I'm wrong, comment on the posts. I would love to be educated on this.
Honestly, I have a feeling that our listeners are going to know way more about this topic than we do.
Please let us know. We'll do a follow-up next Oktoberfest or something.
Yeah, we just sort of picked a theme and went with it, and now I'm drunk. That's kind of how this podcast goes.
Yeah.
So, Xander, as our resident active bartender, it's Oktoberfest season. What's lined up in your world?
Oh God! So McMenamin's at Edgefield has a huge Oktoberfest thing coming up. This
Edgefield, really? They're like their whole thing is wine. They have a. I mean, I know it's a McMenamin.
Can
but
you
I
make a buck
that,
on it?
I figured that it would have done the Oktoberfest more at one of their more beer-oriented.
Can you make a buck on it?
Well, yeah, I mean, but
I mean, Edgefield is a winery, a distillery, a brewery, and a cidery.
Okay,
They do all of them. In fact, they make most of the spirits that McMenamin's makes is out of Edgefield.
Okay, what about like Cornelius Pass or?
We make more spirits than they do.
Oh.
The bulk of what comes out of the McMenamin's line is out of Edgefield for spirits and beer as well.
I mean, raw property size kind of dictates.
It's 74 acres. It's huge. But there's a big Oktoberfest that's coming up on this Sunday, the 30th, which is why I have to get back early from a potential future episode we're doing up in Hood River. But
potential?
The Dalles.
Sorry.
Get it right. OMG. Oh my God.
Got to cross the subway. You would have known
that if you had gone with us to Wagon Con.
Oh, shame.
Anyway.
But there's going to be like a 8-hour, 10-hour long festival going on there with a bunch of live music, including one of my favorite bands, Shervona.
We need to get. Andre? It's Andre, right?
Andre, yeah.
We need to get Andre on here.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to just fucking...
Wait, you're telling me Shervona is playing at Edgefield on Sunday night?
Sunday afternoon. For Oktoberfest.
Look, y'all, I'll pull myself into whatever backseat of whatever car is headed back towards Portland whenever. I'm cool with it. If that's when you guys need to get back, that's fine.
We're going to this weekend?
Yeah, this Sunday. This That's why I have to get back early is to be part of Oktoberfest.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it. I do love Trevona. For listeners who are not aware, Trevona is a very eclectic. They're klezmer, right? I think that's technically
they're
what
like
they would
Russian
be considered.
Gypsy punk with some klezmer flares. I would say
their music more or less sounds klezmer to me, and they've got some punk influences, but it's very klezmer. They're a local Russian gypsy punk klezmer band.
Yeah,
and
absolutely,
they are awesome.
They put on such an amazing show.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
High energy, super fun. If you just want to get like tanked and dance your ass off to anything that is just.
Yeah.
And if you want to know who's hiding Osama bin Laden.
The song is a little dated, it's a little by dated now, but now.
It's so fun.
They keep playing it because everybody loves it.
It sounds good because I've been listening to a lot of techno klezmer lately.
Now, Xander, I believe you were in one of their videos.
I am in one of their videos, and I will talk more about it when it comes to being around Christmas time, because it's a Christmas-themed video.
And we'll include links to that in our later episodes, if we ever release a Christmas album.
Yeah, there might be a scene where I blow a cigar into a baby's face. I don't know.
What?
You're a bad man. You're a bad, bad man.
Come on, bottoms up.
Please don't tell me you actually did that. But I'm a mandatory reporter.
This is...
I don't understand the question, and therefore I refuse to answer it.
Fair enough.
This is your first time working at an establishment that had like a formal celebration of Oktoberfest, correct?
Yes, it is. And I haven't done it yet. So
may God have mercy on your soul.
Though I have experienced the aftermath of, you know, downtown bars having Oktoberfest where the place I worked did not, and then them all flooding into our place afterwards. Much like, you know, St. Patrick's Day and whatnot is.
Yeah.
I get remnants of these celebrations after a while, and then, you know, like drunkard sloppy seconds. I don't know. It's just bad.
Yeah. I will gladly go to most rural Oktoberfest parties because I grew up going to those. And, you know, given the weird vagaries of Minnesota law, I was 12 years old, so I was legally allowed to drink at them because my parents were with me.
Is that how it worked back then?
Well,
today, yes, still?
They finally changed it.
It's a state law.
But how it worked was there was this weird thing where if you were above the age of 12 or above, the municipality declared the public commons to be the domicile of every resident. And under Minnesota state law, if you're in your domicile, your children can drink whatever you give them.
Domicile is just a household?
That would be your family household, yes.
Sure. But not in an actual Oktoberfest in the street.
Correct. Unless the town declares the town commons to be the domicile, the legally registered domicile of every adult in the community.
For this one day and one day only.
But
was that Oktoberfest?
That was Oktoberfest.
Oh, fascinating.
Very well done there, Minnesota. Very well done.
Yes. Our Germans are well skilled in the art of ducking and dodging. Unfortunately, experience professionally with Oktoberfest,
damn girl,
has always been working it as a second gig or a temp job, getting brought in. And it was almost always a college bar party. And they were always disgusting. They were always horrible. It was always heavy duty for the bouncers. It was, you know, you had cops watching everything that happened, you know, so.
Doesn't sound fun.
No, it's, here's the thing. When it's done right, Oktoberfest is this beautiful mix of decent beer and great sausage and wonderful sauerkraut.
Decent
and great
beer,
music.
Great sausage.
Pepperidge Farms. I don't know.
And great music and a great fun time. When it's done like Cinco de Mayo on steroids.
Ugh.
Well, I have been enjoying all of these beers. I know that we've had some mixed feelings on their flavors throughout the evening, but for the most part...
Fuck it, I don't need to talk anymore. Somebody give me another one.
Yeah.
Here, try this Stormbreaker Stormtoberfest, because this one I've actually been enjoying.
I did not care for it.
I've been enjoying pretty much all of them.
Okay.
And I think I've been deadened to beer living in this town.
Ooh, much, you're right. The Stormbreaker's really good.
It's good.
It's anything good.
It's not an Oktoberfest, but it's really good.
I will drink anything that is not a soup. And by that, I mean Guinness or anything that's thicker that generally you want to eat with a fork.
You insult the drink of my people.
I fucking hate Guinness. Guinness is goddamn terrible.
I'm not
terrible.
A care for
it. I don't like the ritual behind it and everything, and I will fight you. One thing that I hate, or I don't like.
Parking lot, no.
I don't like. Porters, I don't like stouts.
Boo.
I don't like anything that requires
wait
chewing.
Till winter time recording. I'm bringing in all of those.
Oh, that's fine. And I'm going to bring on my hams. And I'm going to sip on that ham.
I've been drinking a Rainier pretty much this entire time. The only one I cared for was the Ninkasi.
Or I might bring in some Narragansett or some Pugmont Tucky cold snack.
If we don't
I'll take
do,
that cold snack.
If we don't do mulled wine and mulled cider for I a don't Christmas drink mold. Episode,
thank you.
We're you're failing. You're failing.
I don't like fungus in my liquids.
What?
I don't drink mold.
It's not mold, it's mold. God damn you.
Anyways, let's cut the developer talk and wrap this episode, ladies and gentlemen.
So these drinks, which ones have you liked the most?
The water was fabulous.
We do have really good water here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, but it's not fluoridated.
It's not as good as back home.
It is not fluoridated water.
The Stormtoberfest from Stormbreaker and the Oktoberfest from Ninkasi, I believe, are my two favorites currently that I've had so far. The ones I've had from Germany, I have not enjoyed one iota.
Huh. Why not?
Drink this. It's gross.
I think that's probably why they lost the wars. They brewed shitty beer and haven't changed their ways since the 1500s.
You know, when I was in high school, my buddy had a...
snap.
When I was in high school, my buddy had a ska band.
Yeah.
Ska, because it was popular then.
Yeah, because it was the 90s.
Called One Eye Yoda. Yeah?
One Eye Yoda.
One Eye.
Wait.
One Eye Yoda.
We're not allowed to do beer puns, but you can throw down One Eye Yoda at the end for no fucking reason.
Suck at your back.
God damn you.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
Well, we've been, I don't even know how long this has been going on because I'm drunk. This is, we are not making characters after this.
Were
folks.
You recording I'm all sorry. Of that?
Yeah, no. I was recording all of that.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So we have to close this out somehow. And it's late September and we talked about controversies and rain. I look forward to the rain coming back.
Me too. I miss the rain.
Let it rain.
I miss the rain. It's
over
here in
Antifa.
The Pacific Northwest.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Ha. Bless the rains down in Antifa.
You know, that song... Okay, fucking
no.
No. All right, so here's the thing. Somebody tweeted to Weezer saying, hey, you guys, when are you guys going to do a cover of Rains Over Africa or whatever? And they're like, okay, whatever. And then they ended up doing it. So this is drunk history, right? So somebody tweeted to Weezer and they said we won this song. And we
God,
just like,
kill it
all
with
right,
fire.
Or whatever.
Kill it with fire.
And we did it. And then they tour all over the place and they did a song and then now Toto tours and they actually do Weezer's Hash Pipe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They actually do a really fucking solid cover of Hash Pipe that you would not expect to come from an alt rock, from a light rock.
I don't like that song from Weezer.
Like Toto.
Yeah. What? I don't like that song from Weezer. I don't like that song from Toto.
What?
Why do you hate America?
Commie.
Oh. Where's your beer so I can knock it over?
Hold me back! I'll take you!
God! Of this. Oh!
This is the motherfucker who rode up to our 4th of July party waving a flag dressed like a Minuteman.
Oh, I remember.
Okay.
It was amazing.
Blasting patriotic tunes with alcohol for all of you.
I'm kidding, right?
I mean, I would point out that the American Communist Party did lobby for massive enlistment during World War I, but we'll go beyond that. Anyways.
You know who else likes to ride around town blasting patriotic music? The Enclave. The Enclave, Xander.
Yes.
That's right.
I'm in. I want one of those iBots.
iBots were pretty cool.
I was going to say, that sounds great. Can I get one of those?
So let's go ahead and close this out. We are at this point just rambling on different directions. So let's raise a glass to Oktoberfest, whatever it might mean to anybody
Trust.
Who is
sure.
listening.
It's we probably Prost, fine.
All of that. Speaking of Fallout.
It's a good excuse beers, to eat sausage.
And drink beer. And German sausage is pretty good.
It really is. Bratwurst.
Brat, not the worst.
So let's go ahead and close this out by once again reminding people that we have a Discord server where we actively engage with our listener. And we have, or, sorry, our we have two listeners now.
Do I have a login for the Discord
three.
Server?
No, I'll set you up with one.
I don't know.
We have three listeners.
We have a Facebook presence. We tweet occasionally, and you know we're all online. We're all humans, and we'd love to just chat with you about anything that you've listened to and what your favorite beer is. And,
we do.
Yeah.
Great.
So on our Discord server, I want to go and give a shout out to the Tin Man, who just started messaging us 2 days ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Tin Man. Thanks.
Hey, Tin Man.
He's from Tacoma, Washington, I think.
Correct.
Oh, fantastic. Tacoma.
Yeah, yeah. So, Tin Man, thank you. I want to give a shout out to you.
Come on down to Portland and we'll get you drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, what?
Sure, why not?
And introduce you to some strippers.
And then, that we can do. You know, obviously a shout out to, what's his name, Greg?
Oh, yes, thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Greg. Yeah. And then our one iTunes reviewer, Gun Street Girl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Gun Street Girl, shout out to you too.
Yeah.
So to our three listeners, thank you.
Thank you, listeners.
And if you also want to be a part of this, you can also leave reviews on iTunes, or you can go to our Discord server and chat with us, or Facebook, maybe Twitter.
And for the love of God, if you're one of the 30 people who have told me to my face that you like the show, for the love of God, give us a review, okay?
Please give us a review and share links far and wide, please.
And on that note, you've been listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Again, I am NPC.
Just Jacob.
Dr. Xander J. Mander.
Poppy Beaujolais.
And again, we want to remind you.
Keep it rubber side down.
Always tip your bartender.
May your dice always roll 20s.
And always drink responsibly.
Holy shit, we got it right.
Nailed it!
Woo!
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars.